Hello and welcome to this week's official EFL podcast. Notts County hotshot Macaulay Langstaff joins us after a truly stellar couple of seasons.
When you've came from where I've came from, you appreciate every single day. And look, I'm playing for a club like Notts County, the size of the club, the history, everything's just unbelievable. So when I'm coming in every single day, I just appreciate the fact that I'm, one, getting paid to play football, that's every kid's dream, but two, to do it for a club like Notts County is special.
It's 2-2 for Sky Sports' David Stowell, who co-hosts once again, and we hear from former England forward Emil Heskey on duty for the EFL's Week of Action. It's the official EFL podcast. Right then, let's get cracking. It's grim out, Halloween has been and gone, as has Bonfire Now. It's now heads down towards Christmas. I can't believe I've just said that. Well, that's after the next international break coming up, of course, but fear not. Dear listeners, I'm joined by Sky Sports Sunshine Superman. This is the only podcast where you will get a Donovan reference. I promise you that. It's David Stowell. David, how are you?
I'm well. I thought you were linking to me with something to do with Halloween, which would have perhaps been apt, but no, I'll take sunshine. How are you? You well?
Yes. I'm good. Thank you very much. Lots to get through, lots to get stuck into. Let's get cracking. We reflect briefly on Friday night, Leicester against Leeds at the King Power Stadium. Everyone was saying if Leicester had won this, they were writing off the league. It was Leicester going up from the top two, and Leeds needed to win it. I think in some section they were calling it a must win, which, given it was between first and third, sounds crazy. But then it has drop the gap to 11 points, which is possibly surmountable. What was your take on the game?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Leeds had to win it to keep their interest in the top two this side of Christmas. We know there's a heck of a lot of football to go after Christmas as well as now, but you don't want to see Leicester City running away with it if you're a fan of anyone else in the Championship. Ipswich have been brilliant as well, let's underline that. So the top two were threatening to just, you know, seal those automatic promotion places very early doors. But clearly Leeds United had to win that, and to think that they ended Leicester City's 9-game winning run in the Championship is incredible. It says an awful lot for the work that's being done at the King Power, and an awful lot as well for the work that's being done at Leeds United now. And I think we've got a really interesting promotion race, because that sort of top end of the Championship is congested, it's busy, and it's full of quality. So for the league, I think that was a good result. But we'll see how it all plays out in the next few weeks with so many fixtures, with so many teams playing each other.
And Leeds, of course, keeping a close eye on Ipswich Town in second, who were 2-0 down against Birmingham City, came back to draw. They also drew last night against Rotherham, a very, very late equaliser for the Millers, which means it keeps everybody nice and, I don't know, in check at the very top of the Championship. There was another live game on Sunday, which was Norwich against Blackburn Rovers. We're coming to Blackburn in just a second, but Norwich City, can you put the finger on what's not quite happening for the Canaries at the moment?
It's tricky, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, they've got some very good players in there capable of producing real quality on the field. The issue off the field, perhaps, there's obviously Ben Napper is coming in as the new sporting director. He was due to come at the end of November. He's actually coming in 2 weeks early now. He's going to start next Monday. To replace Stuart Webber, who of course is leaving the club and has done brilliant work for Norwich City over the years. And it was an interesting statement from the Canaries Trust, the supporters trust of Norwich City this week, sort of talking about what they call the state of inertia at the club, waiting for the arrival of Ben Napper to sort of kick Norwich City on and get into this sort of new era, if you like, at the club. And they were talking about this sort of feeling of disconnection between the fans and the club, which is developing now. Obviously, results are not going the way that they'd want them to go. There's a lot of pressure on the manager. And it just feels that there's a lot going on at the club now. Lots of noise, which is a fact affecting the performances on the field and the results. And from the outside looking in, you want to see them competing in this crazy promotion race that we're talking about, and you want to see things get sorted out and hopefully in the next couple of weeks with games to come, obviously so many matches to come, there's an opportunity to pick up points as well as to not pick them up. It's kind of you've got to try and look at the positive side of plenty of games to come rather than dreading them, I think, if you're in as a Norwich City fan at the moment. So hopefully that all gets sorted out and they can lift themselves at the table.
It's certainly a finger that has been pointed at Norwich City in all the time that I can remember, that disparity between a fan base and the club itself. I mean, obviously, there is that iconic image of Delia asking where on earth the fans were during the course of a game. I don't think we're quite there yet. There's always another game to play, of course. But let's just have a little brief chat with regards Blackburn Rovers. They've got the joint top scorer in the Championship, Sammy Smodics, all from open play, I hasten to add. It's funny when I read that, because the thought of taking a penalty absolutely terrifies me. So I don't think, you know what I mean? It's easier from the penalty spot. Have you seen the size of goalkeepers nowadays? The Giants. It's crazy. They play Preston on Friday night, which is always a keenly fought Lancashire derby. Again, it was a team that we saw flirt with finishing in the top six last season, putting themselves in a really good position at various parts of the season, up in and around the top two, but falling away the last couple of seasons. Under Yondal Thomason, they've got a coach who is absolutely that, haven't they? A real coach of players who gets a lot out of them.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to doing that game actually on Friday. I think I'm with you as well. You're presenting, I'm commentating, so apologies for that in advance to anyone watching.
That's just giving people a real red flag just to stay away from.
Yes,
brilliant.
Do something else Friday night. We talk about the congested nature of the Championship. The consistency is always key. When you look back at who wins promotion to the Premier League, it's always the team that's been the most consistent over the season. Mm-hmm. Blackburn's issues recently have been, I think they've won four of the last five and lost five of the last nine. So, I mean, that tells you everything that's sort of up and down a little bit at the moment. And a lot of that comes down to the first goal in their games. So they played 15 games. They've scored first in seven of them and won six of those. They've conceded first in eight of them and lost six of those. So clearly, generally speaking, first goal is all important in their matches. And talking of goals, you mentioned Sammy Smodics. I mean, great to see him pushing forward a bit more this season. They've lost a lot of goals, obviously, in the summer. Ben Brereton, Diaz leaving. Someone had to step forward, and he is quite literally doing just that and bagging the goals.
Look forward to that. Look forward to listening to you as well. Your journey over there will be a little shorter than mine, which is down to West London to cover it. Right, two new bosses, though, in the division. Liam Manning, friend of the podcast, who we got on last week. We've got him a brand new job down at Bristol. Let's go with him, and then we'll go with Joe Edwards at Millwall.
Yes, well, the Liam Manning side of things is interesting. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk since his departure. Bristol City, a great opportunity for any manager going in. I think Nigel Pearson did a good job there. It was a tricky job in some ways, because after Lee Johnson left, there was a certain amount of budget cuts that were needed, I think, because of pandemic and things like that. So Nigel did what he could to push things on. But five defeats in the last seven meant there was always likely to be a few rumblings there. Liam's obviously done a great job. We chatted at length with him last week, and I think he's a good guy. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's one to keep an eye on for the future. I didn't think the future was going to quite come as quickly as it has in terms of him stepping up to the Championship. Lots of noise from the Oxford end about this. Understandably, you kind of, if you strip the emotion back a little bit and you're outside the club looking in, you kind of think, well, obviously they're going to be disappointed because they're in a great position. They've invested heavily in the squad in the summer and in him as well, and wanted to kick things on. If you're Bristol City, you're looking around for one of the bright new young managers, if you like, and he's obviously going to be top of the list. And the one thing I would say is he's got to get his head in the Championship very quickly. Not that he won't have his head there in some ways, because he'll have been looking up hoping that Oxford United were going to get there, but he's obviously now, instead of thinking about League One teams, he's got to be right up to speed with Championship teams and fast. And then there's a window around the corner, and we'll see what he can do with a club with a lot of potential in Bristol City.
We call them young managers, but both Liam and Joe Edwards, they've been coaching for a hell of a long time. There's lots of minutes both on the pitch and on the training ground. So Joe's gone in at Millwall. Is this a slight change of direction, if that's not too vague a summation?
Yeah, I think it is, but it's also a pat on the back for a young coach who is very talented. We've sort of had brief chats in the past sort of on location before games and things, and it's interesting to always talk to these, we call them new managers, but they're not new coaches. They've been around an awful long time. Liam Manning's got 17 years experience as a coach. I mean, that's crazy at the age of 38, really. And that comes down to the fact that one door closes in the career not happening because of injury or whatever, another door opens and you make the most of the opportunity, which he has. Same with Joe and the experience he's got already under his belt. And I think if I were a Millwall fan now, I'd be excited at what he brings. There's that unknown quantity side of an appointment like that, which has an element of risk to it. And you never know quite how that's going to go. And the inexperience as a manager, you know, there is a risk there. Of course there is. And every club knows when they take on someone like that, that there is a risk. But there's also potentially an awful lot of reward from someone who's very, very talented and knows a lot about the game and a lot of people within the game. So good luck to them both.
Absolutely. And of course, Joe working at Chelsea and Everton with Frank Lampard and Thomas Tuchel respectively. So that then means dropping into League One. You've got Oxford in second place, looking for a new boss. They're 3 points off the top, keeping the chasing pack at a tiny arm's length. I mean, that on the outside, and from hearing from Liam last week, it's a very good job for someone to step into, isn't it?
Super job. I mean, he's left the club in a very good place. I know there's a lot of anger from the fan base that he's been and gone very quickly, and I get that. From a fan's point of view, I understand how people look at things as a fan, how Liam will have looked at the opportunity at Bristol City as a coach, as a manager, and how the club will have to have looked at things. I mean, I know that I think the statement suggested there was a release clause that was met, which obviously was in the deal when he was appointed, so Oxford knew that there was potential for other clubs to come calling. They obviously hoped it didn't happen so quickly, but they're in a great position. And it's interesting to note, listening to a podcast this morning and also just looking at reaction on Twitter, which is not necessarily the greatest yardstick in the world.
Very true.
But there's a mixture of anger, but also some people wishing well, saying he's got us into a good position, so let's try and kick on from here. And whoever does come into that job at the Kassam, it's a very good squad now to kick on with. Few injuries, of course, which everyone's sort of picking up at this stage of the season. But straight away, they've gone out in the EFL Trophy. They've beaten Chelsea under-21s 5-0 last night. Leo Snowden's come on. He's become the youngest player in history, which is a nice headline to sort of look to the future, if you like, which is what they have to now do.
Certainly brightens things up, of course. Big games this weekend. Bolton, Blackpool, Derby, Barnsley sticking out for those as well. Two former Premier League teams. Two sets of former Premier League teams going head-to-head in those ones. 18th place Exeter face a very long trip up to Fleetwood. And that dovetails nicely in with something you want to pick up on, Stowley, because as I said, it's looking a bit grim outside. There's a long way between now and spring. But for some players that find themselves in a position at this time of year, there's a long way between here and getting back to full fitness, isn't there?
There is. I think it's an important point to make that there's a point in the season, and it comes around about now, when you have to feel sympathy for clubs and for players. And I know there's not a lot of sympathy in the world for footballers because of bank balances versus other people's bank balances, and I totally understand that. But when you think about the sort of mental health side of things, which we talk about a lot nowadays and perhaps didn't in the past, there are various players throughout the EFL who have suffered career-threatening injuries, season-ending injuries, certainly. One who springs out in the last week or so, Demi Mitchell at Exeter, playing in the Carabao Cup against Middlesbrough. Exeter were hoping for a big upset there and also hoping for a victory to sort of be a bit of a springboard, because they've lost 10 of the last 12 in all competitions. It's a really sticky run they're on, and pressure obviously on Gary Caldwell in that regard. Demi Mitchell, one of the players who was key in an attacking sense for them, he's now out for the season. There are various players. I know we're going to go on and talk about Notts County, and they've lost Matt Palmer as well for the rest of the season. Lots of players like this now who are going to spend a long time recovering, and I can speak with a bit of experience of that, going through an ACL reconstruction myself. I'm 5 months post-operation. It's boring. It's really monotonous, the recovery. Yeah, you're in the gym. It is. And I mean, I'm not trying to get back to play football at any level, but I want to get back to having a life at a certain level. And you're in the gym every day, going through all these boring exercises. And for the footballers, they're looking out of the window and seeing their mates running around doing what they want to do, watching them at the weekend play football. It is tough. And the bank balance becomes irrelevant at that point. It's about how they're all thinking. So I wish a lot of players in the EFL, WSL as well, Premier League, you know, around the world, players who are going through tough times with that injury and that mental battle at the moment. And good luck to them all with the recovery.
Amen to all of that, my friend. Macaulay Langstaff, of course, is our Notts County player this week that's going to be joining us in just a little bit on the pod. My word, that boy knows exactly where the goal is. Swindon Town have had an intriguing few days. So last night, up against Colchester United, looking to get back to winning ways off the back of a weekend defeat. They lost, unfortunately, 3-1 to Hughes. But I suppose losing 3-1, and this is me trying to be super positive, the fact that they weren't 7-0 down with an hour gone like they were at the weekend, is that incremental. I sound like I'm being flippant. Perhaps I possibly am a little bit, but a little bit of work to be done, shall we say, with sound over the next few days.
Yeah, it was a strange one, wasn't it? I mean, first of all, a couple of days, what was it, 3rd of November, so Thursday of last week, Mike Flynn signed a contract extension. And obviously, there was a lot of positivity about the future under him. He'd started the season with a 9-game unbeaten run. It was, you know, all very positive. Then, of course, you go into the FA Cup first round, and we all know anything can happen in the FA Cup. And there's always at least one, if not two, sometimes three shocks or goal-laden games when anything can happen. And, of course, Swindon Town involved in one. 7-0 down, as you say. They grabbed four goals back at the end, including two in added time, to make the scoreline slightly more respectable than it would have been.
But, never been heard of.
It's crazy, isn't it? Swindon 4, Aldershot 7. The first ever non-league side to score 7 goals against an EFL team in the FA Cup. They were 3 down after 10 minutes. I mean, it was a crazy match, and one of those that, if it's the old cliche, if you were there, you got your money's worth, but not if you're a Swindon fan, because you didn't want to see your team 7-0 down, and maybe many left before the four consolation goals were scored. Strange old time, but you know, they're 10th in the table, they're 3 points off the playoffs. There's plenty of potential at Swindon Town. The strange thing is Colchester beat them last night. They're now only 4 points behind Swindon, and they're in 18th, so it just shows the bottom half up to the playoffs is crazily busy in League Two, and all to play for. And Christmas and around the Christmas spell will be fascinating to see.
That's why David Stower is always welcome on the on the podcast, because he accentuates the positives. That's just his way of living. Lastly, with League Two, Graham Alexander's back. He's taken over at 16th place, Bradford City. Great to have one of the good guys back. And the only way is up now for the Bantams, you feel?
Well, it should be. That's what I would say, because we covered the playoffs last season when Carlisle got the better of Bradford in the League Two playoffs, and that shouldn't have happened. And I mean that with the greatest respect to both clubs in terms of where they are financially and all the rest of it. Bradford City should have got through that and then should have got to the final, and then who knows there. But Carlisle played very well. They did a good job over the two legs. From Graham's point of view, he's been out of work for 3 weeks. So he's had a bit of... You know, we managers talk about a reset and about, you know, perhaps having a little holiday and putting their feet up on a beach somewhere. Not an awful lot of time for that, as he only left MK Dons middle of October. But he's got a lot of experience. There's been a little bit of chat on the internet about whether he's the right man for the job or not. Ultimately, they need to just get together as a unit, Bradford City, and move on up the table. I mean, they shouldn't be in League Two based on the size of the club. There's a lot made of the attendances that they have. But if you're in League Two, then you've got to compete. You shouldn't be 16th. I mean, they are, albeit only 6 points off the playoffs, but still, 16th is far too low for them to be in. So good luck to him. Good luck to the club. Let's see what happens. But they've got teams to chase already. I mean, Stockport, Notts County and Wrexham, 10 and 15 points clear of Bradford from where they are now. So lots of work to do.
Certainly lots of work to do. And as we know, it matters about results on the pitch, doesn't it? We're all entitled to opinion and debate. I always think it's a little premature though when managers are written off or dismissed out of hand, wherever the platform is, ahead of what you've actually seen. I mean, feel free to boo the life out of him if you're watching the game and it's not gone well. That is inherently what we're all used to.
It's always easier to criticise though, isn't it? Always easier to criticise than to be positive. So there we are.
And if we know anything on the Official EFL podcast, positivity is king. Right, David Stowell, you take a little break and put your feet up as we speak to former Leicester City, Liverpool and England striker Emil Heskey, who's at Barnsley today as part of the EFL's Week of Action. It's the EFL's annual Week of Action, which once again sees all 72 clubs from the EFL's three divisions come together to demonstrate the impact that football has in positively changing people's lives. And this year it's bigger and better than ever with the launch of the Sky Bet EFL Building Foundations Fund, which will commit £6 million over 6 years to fund community football projects across England and Wales. Players and managers have this week been joining participants across the land in all sorts of positive activity and community projects with the likes of Portsmouth's John Mousinho, Southampton's striker Che Adams and Wrexham's Paul Mullin all out and about in their local areas meeting participants and getting involved in the life-changing community activities their clubs deliver through their club community organisations. One such initiative is the Walking Football Programme laid on by Barnsley FC. And joining us live from Oakwell for the launch of the Building Foundations Fund is former Leicester City, Liverpool and England striker Emil Heskey. Emil, welcome to the official EFL podcast. Tell us about what's been happening at Barnsley today, please.
Yeah, it's been a great day so far. joined in the Walking Football. It's actually more difficult than I ever thought it would be because all I want to do is run. But it's been great to be asked to come along and support this. I just about got crept under. It was over 50s, but at my ripe old age, I joined in and it was really, really good fun. Good fun. And it was it's great what the EFL and Sky Bet Building Foundation Fund are doing and committing to.
Well, I mean, they're committing to £6 million over 6 years. I mean, it's going to make a huge difference to the local communities at the centre of clubs just like Barnsley. And, of course, there's 71 clubs across England and Wales. And most importantly, it makes a huge difference to the individuals who are benefiting from these particular schemes, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Again, making them active, giving them the opportunity to support and to be around people is great, because again, it's not just football, but it's sport in general. But football has its part to play in that. We all love football, and when I was playing out there, they were all love getting involved and playing and scoring goals and celebrating. We're not allowed to tackle, so that was a tough one for me as well. But it was great to see them all coming out in their droves to support and to get involved.
I think the other thing is that's worth saying is it's not just something that only happens during the EFL's week of action. This is a full-time, 52 weeks of the year commitment to make a real difference to communities. And being a Leicester lad yourself and knowing how strong community is around a city such as that, you must be thrilled that with your hometown club as well, being part of what that is and that process moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. Again, when you're talking about activations, Leicester is fantastic at that as well. So going around Leicester and getting the community to get involved and be as one. Because again, it just improves, the fund will improve quality of life within them communities. And Leicester, I know obviously quite well because born and raised there, still got a lot of my family there, etc. So it'll be great for them to get involved as well.
Well, Emil, I just want to bring in, if I may, Kieran Campbell from the Barnsley FC Community Trust, who's there with you at Oakwell today. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us, mate. Just tell us a little bit about the Walking Football programme that your club's foundation is running and what the aims are for people in the community.
Yeah, thank you for having me on today. So the Walking Football event that we have today encompasses a number of our health and wellbeing programmes. So whether that's looking at activities of walking, whether it's walking football, exercise sessions, but really trying to encompass positive change for local people and engaging them in a space and using the power of football to be able to do that. So we have around 30 or 40 participants today joining in the Walking Football. Emil's been very competitive in that as well, as you would imagine. But it's all about connecting people. It's bringing the community together in a fantastic environment that we've got here at Oakwell, but also to support people with their wider health and wellbeing. So whether it is to socially connect with others or people maybe here with high blood pressure and using the physical activity and sport and the power of football to support them in a wider sense.
And that commitment from the Sky Bet and EFL connection, that £6 million over 6 years, what's that going to do for clubs like yourself and for the services that you provide?
It's going to be a fantastic addition to what we can do. It's going to enable us to kind of broaden our outreach and reach a wider demographic than we already do. And locally, there is a significant need to support people with their health and wellbeing, to get people more physically active and moving. And this fund will be direct in allowing us to do that.
Have you seen that demand for these particular types of initiative? Has that increased over the past few seasons in your experience?
It has increased, yeah. Obviously, the pandemic and the recovery is post-pandemic as well, and we're still seeing that. I think the nature of what we do here and across the network as foundations and trusts is that we adapt and we try and support people and positively change lives. In essence, what we do, and I was talking to Emil about this, is that the Walking Football session is an integral part, but after that we enable people to connect. So whether it's connecting with each other's with tea, coffees, and a couple of chocolate biscuits that won't hurt, or whether it's bringing in people to support and have talks around prostate cancer, mm-hmm. around how to lower blood pressure and how to engage physical activity into your lives, to have those 1% changes to, in essence, make people live healthier, longer lives.
It sounds like you've really got your finger on the pulse of what this is, because as we know, it's not just the improved physical fitness, is it? It's the wider reaching benefits of doing something such as this.
No, definitely. And as a football club, it's a commitment for us to continue that and to be able to again use this springboard from the fund, and also use the EFL Week of Action as well to raise the profile of what we're doing here and across the country as well, of how people can engage with us.
Well, it's amazing work that you're all doing there, Kieran, and wish you all the very, very best with it. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, Emil, before we let you go, I'm intrigued by something you said earlier on with regards to you taking part in this and you being reticent with regards to obviously not being allowed to run around. Has there been a lot of people in South Yorkshire attempting to take chunks out of Emil Heskey, former England international, this morning?
You're actually not allowed to tackle. I was trying to take chunks out of them.
What?
I fouled someone. You say you're not allowed to tackle from behind. And we're used to that, aren't we? So there was a couple of slide tackles trying to get the ball back.
And just to finally knit it all together, that feeling that you get from physical activity, from that collective sharing of experience like they are doing with Walking Football, you must know from your wonderful career that's behind you and obviously a bright future ahead, how important that is, that sense of community, that sense of coming together, and how important these initiatives are.
It's absolutely huge. Again, just to rely on people as well, because sometimes you feel that you're on your own, but to come to these sort of events and you've got people around you making you feel good, and you're feeling good because you're working out, you're running around, you're getting a little bit of a sweat on, and there's that feel good factor about it is nothing but a positivity that's surrounding them.
Well, listen, it's a wonderful story, a truly wonderful story, and one of the many that they're happening all over England and Wales as part of the EFL's Week of Action, made even more exciting by their partnership with Sky Bet to launch the Building Foundations Fund. Emil, thanks so much for joining us today on the thanks official EFL podcast, mate. And if you'd like some more information on the EFL's Week of Action, or would like to know how you can take part in projects in your community, have a look on your own club's website. I'll have a look at www.eftrust.com for more information on what's happening local and nationally. Someone who's ripping up trees both locally and nationally is Notts County striker Macaulay Langstaff. Thank you so much, Macca, for joining us this morning. Myself and David have been very excited about being able to talk to you. I, as a player, ran around a lot, didn't know where the goal was. Stowley's a little bit similar to me. You, my friend, you can score goals in your sleep. How are you doing?
Good, mate, you?
We're good. I think you're the first guest, football guest, that's asked us how we were. So that inherently sets it in a different space, which I think does reflect possibly where you sit now at 26 for Notts County. Your journey here hasn't been straightforward, has it, by any stretch?
No, absolutely not. But I wouldn't change it for the world. I think when you've came from where I've came from, you appreciate every single day. And look, I'm playing for a club like Notts County, the size of the club, the history, everything's just unbelievable. So when I'm coming in every single day, I just appreciate the fact that I'm, one, getting paid to play football, that's every kid's dream, but two, to do it for a club like Notts County is special.
And the thing is as well, Macaulay, is you talk about going through the levels, having read and seen and watched your journey. You've taken to each level very, very easily. Just talk us through what that is, what your approach is on a match day to score. Is scoring goals anywhere just second nature to you?
I think it has been since I was young. I started as a number nine, and I always had this sort of goal-scoring instinct, always scored goals through the levels. When I got to about 17, 18, 19, it was a change and adapted and became a winger. But I was a winger that scored goals. I was a winger that had that goal-scoring instinct still that carried through it into being a wide player. Obviously, everyone knows the story in the last 2 years, signing for Notts County and Luke Williams changing my position from a wide player to a number nine striker again.
Did he tell you that's what you... What did he come to you and say, Macca, this is... You played there, I'm going to play you here, and this is how it's going to be, or is that a debate? Does he ask? Did he ask you what you thought about that?
No, so I actually tell a story. So basically, I signed for Notts County. There was no manager at the time. Luke hadn't been appointed, so there was no manager. And when I signed, I thought I might be a striker in a front two, because I didn't really play with wingers, so I thought I might be a striker in a front two. And then obviously, the gaffer got appointed, and his first meeting was we watched his old Swansea team and the way they played, and obviously I was a wide player, I was a winger at Gateshead, so I was watching the team and the formation. I was thinking, well, they don't play with wide players, so that isn't a great start. I was like, am I going to play in this system? And then the striker, he says, doesn't run the channels, so I'm like, well, that's my biggest strength. Last year, the year before, I was like, that's my biggest strength, so they don't play with wingers and they don't run the channels, so I'm like, I'm not fitting in here. And it was one of the first sessions we'd done, like 11v11. He was trying to get his point across to the lads and how he wanted to play and things, and I made a run into the channel and got the ball. I thought, oh, I've done well there, I've crossed it, and someone got a touch in the box. I was playing as a striker at the time in training, and I thought, I've done really well there, ran into the channel, got in behind the defence and crossed it. And he stopped the full session and he was like, No, my strikers don't do this in this team. So I was just thinking, right, they don't play with wide players, they don't play with strikers that run channels, I'm not going to play here. Obviously, over the next few weeks, I was adapting and listening to every word he said and watching videos and scoring goals in training, scoring goals in pre-season games. I realised quite quickly that I could go to a different level in terms of my numbers. So yeah, at the start, I speak to him now and say I was a bit sceptical at first because I didn't think I was going to play, but obviously after a few weeks, I realised that it was going to work.
Is that a lesson to young players, though, Macaulay, to listen to people around them, perhaps, and keep an open mind? Because you could have quite easily said, right, I'm not doing that. This is not my game. I'm not going to fit in here. Get on the phone to someone and say that I don't want to be here anymore. But instead, you've obviously taken it all on board and said, right, come on, let's do this. And your numbers speak for themselves.
Absolutely. I'd say that's probably one of my biggest strengths. I'm not stubborn or I haven't got an ego to think that I've cracked anything. Even now, after scoring 42 last year and having 12 goals already this season, if the gaffer tells me to do something and says I'm not doing it right, I need to do this, I'm gonna say, yeah, that's right, I'm going to try that, because he hasn't been wrong yet. Why should I not listen to the gaffer just because I've scored goals? And that was the case when I came in. And not, obviously, I scored 32 for Gateshead the season before. So it could
have
been...
These numbers are ridiculous. I've got these written down, but to hear you say them, I'm kind of going, That is crazy. They're crazy numbers.
That's only been the past few years. If before that, they weren't great.
I wasn't going to mention that, but I was just going to mention the 84 in your last 114 league games for the two clubs together, and that's very impressive.
God. We'll just keep that. Yeah, we'll just keep that for a few years. So when I came into Notts and I'd scored 32, playing a certain way, I think other players maybe might look at that and go, "Well, I'm not going to listen to the manager. I've just scored 32 doing it this way. Why should I change?" But I wasn't stubborn enough to do that. I would never be. And yeah, from the first meeting I had with him, I listened to every word he said, and I'm glad I did now, because obviously I've took my numbers to a different level.
There's some good people to listen to at Notts County. David McGoldrick is one that stands out. And given the kind of age bracket that you're operating in, where Didzy, as everyone calls him, finds himself as a veteran, which makes, in turn, me feel very old, because when I was at Southampton, he was a young kid at Southampton. So now that he's the elder statesman, I just sit here rubbing this old face, mate, and just thinking, my word, time flies. But what has he brought to Notts County? Because as we know, being born in Nottingham, a real kind of famous son of the city, what does he bring both on and off the pitch? Because he looks like a real leader.
I think the first thing he brings, and I noticed this in the first days, he's got an aura about him, you know, the career he's had, and that's on and off the pitch. On the pitch, the first few days I'm training with David McGoldrick, and I'm like, I used to watch this guy a few years ago playing the Premier League, and now I'm training with him. He's a strike partner. So the first thing he brings is like that aura, that confidence. You have when you look around the dressing room, when you've got players like David McGoldrick, John Bostock, now Dan Gosling's obviously signed, and these players have played at the top level, and when you've got these players in the group, it gives you a massive lift and massive confidence going up to the pitch, because you know that you trust them. So that's the first thing he brings. And then I think unbelievable guy off the pitch, helping the young lads, so calm as well. You know, when he comes in, you think, oh, he's playing in the Premier League, is he going to be sort of big time or anything like that. Complete opposite. The most humble, down-to-earth guy you've ever met in your life. And he's probably sick of me because I was next to him in the dressing room asking him questions. I'm a bit of like, I'm addicted to football, so I love asking him questions about what's Van Dijk like, what's all these players like in the Premier League to play against and stuff like that. So he's probably sick of me. But yeah, just the best guy off the pitch. And obviously on the pitch, his quality, we've seen it in the first few days in training. It's different, you know, the way he moves with the ball, he's touching everything, his link-up play, his passing, his all-round game's incredible. So yeah, he's been a massive addition, and there's no surprise that we've had a really good start this season because we've brought players like him in.
You must be very excited as well, I'm guessing, that you'd say, you know, you've got 12 goals in the last 15 games, and now you've got an ex-Premier League midfielder slotting into the setup in Dan Gosling. As you say, we wish Matty Palmer all the best, by the way, with his injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dan coming in there now, presumably you would be thinking as a striker, well, there's going to be more passes coming my way, more opportunities to score more goals, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you speak about Dan Gosling, his career speaks for itself. The club he's been at, you know, Newcastle, Everton, Bournemouth, top clubs, massive experience, and you see his quality already. He's only trained a couple of days. He played last night. He came on against Lincoln, and you see he's touched the way he passes the ball. Obviously, like you said, Matty Palmer, for me, he's one of the best players I've ever played with, so he's going to be an incredible miss. But when you replace Matty Palmer with someone like Dan Gosling, it gives you a little bit of confidence that nothing's going to change much because he's got bags of quality.
We were talking just before you came on, potentially, about how you view goals and what your favourite type of goal is, and it would be scoring the winner in the manner that you did at the weekend be something that would be how you look at a favourite goal?
Yeah, definitely. I think, and people can't believe when I say this, when I say I'd rather score one of them type of goals than a 25-yard strike that went in the top corner. I don't know why. I think it's what strikers like me, like goal-poking strikers, live off, them tappings. And I think, look, anyone can, I'm not saying anyone can, you've got to have quality, but someone can hit a ball from 25 yards and it could fly in. But for me, to read the way the game's going, read the play, my movement in the box to get away from the defender, and then have the composure to come on. Yeah, sometimes I think people might look at it and it looks easy, you know, a 3-yard tapping. But when the ball's getting slapped across the box and...
Is it the work defenders... done before then, Macca, to get in that position? Because it's funny, because it's something that when people watch football and judge football, there's, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, goal scoring, as I said, completely bypassed me. But for a player such as yourself, it's knowledge, it's a gift, but it's also hard work that gets you. You're never lucky that many times. You're never lucky 42 times in a season, are you? You instinctively know where the ball's going to go. And is that something that you work on? Is it something you can sense, like a sixth sense in the play building up? Is it something that you tell the rest of your teammates? Make sure it's there, because if it's there, I'll be there at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look, if you isolated the actual chance and paused it at the point of contact, every single footballer will say, I can do that. I can finish that chance, and they can. If I isolate that chance, the actual contact of the ball, every footballer would say that. But if it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. So I think it's all the work you've done, all the work you've done before that, the movement, which is probably the biggest part of it for me. The movement, defenders are trying to mark you in the box, so you've got to get away from them. The instincts, it's something I can't work on. I can't really explain. I don't know why. You just have this. When a cross is coming in, you know where it's going to go. So it's not even about me saying to the wingers, put it in that exact position. It's more, put it in the area and I'll read where the ball's going to go. And you just know sometimes. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes there'll be a cross and you don't know where it's going to go. Might ricochet, you've got to be on your toes. But a lot of the time, I do have this sense of where the ball's going to go. And then obviously the finish, it's probably harder than it looks when the ball's getting flashed across the box. It does look quite easy, but it is probably harder than it looks. I always say that. I always say people think that it's easy because of the actual chance that you get. Mm. But there's so much before that goes into it. That, like I say, if it was that easy, every single striker would score 30, 40 goals a year. But they all don't, you know what I mean?
I've got a question for you about last season, Macca, because you got 42 goals in 45 games in the league. And a lot was made, obviously, of Wrexham winning the title in the National League. When you knew that Wrexham were just that little bit ahead of you, and you know, looking at the National League table, knowing that Notts County were going to finish second, because, I mean, you know, over 100 points, over 100 goals scored as a team, crazy season. Was there a part of you and the squad that looked at that table and saw seventh place Bromley 36 points behind you, but in the playoffs, thinking the disaster could happen here? We could have had this amazing season and fall short because of the way that the playoffs work. And we love the playoffs as a neutral. I mean, I'm lucky to commentate on the playoffs. I absolutely adore the excitement of the playoffs. But as a player, if you're second, did you look at that table and just think, oh, here we go?
Absolutely. I think I'd be lying if I said I didn't look at that. And I think all lads would be lying if said they didn't think that. The manager had a meeting with us after the season finished and told us all that we can't think about things like that. But subconsciously, when you're playing against a team in the playoffs that finished 25, 30 points behind you, you think this shouldn't be fair, this shouldn't be right. Even though it is, that's the way we knew, like, Wrexham had beat us, so we knew we had to go through the playoffs. But there's this little small part of you that thinks this shouldn't be, these shouldn't have the same chance as us because they finished so far behind us. So you go into a game against Boreham where they did finish, what, 30 points behind us, 35 points behind us, and they're 2-0 up within 30 minutes.
2-0 up as well.
Yeah, in the game, you're just thinking, well, this is just meant to be. Like, we're not meant to go up because even though you're trying to keep on going in the game and saying, like, we'll go again, getting a half time, we're going to come back, every single player will have been thinking, how can we finish this far ahead of someone? And these are going to go on to play in a final and we're not. So it was really difficult. I think the mindset was, it was difficult to get the mindset of, okay, reset, go again. Even though we told ourselves we were going to do that, subconsciously, I don't think it's very easy to do that. But then I think when you come back and win the game 3-2 and then get promoted on penalties in the final, you look at that and go, it's meant to be then.
And showing those nerves of steel as well in the final, which again, hats off to you, Macca. Astonishing, really. So is there a sense, we mentioned earlier on, and you've mentioned it and spoke about it so wonderfully, eloquently, of the roundabout way of getting from football up in the northeast, working your way down to Notts, playing in the Football League in a team that's doing so very, very well. You talk about interesting yourself as being a nice little ego boost, which I thought was very, very apt. But given where you are now, given how you've taken to the level, given potentially in your head making up for lost time away from the professional pyramid, what next then for you? Are you going to give me the straight bat and say Notts County doing well and you doing well and see where the season goes?
Yeah, definitely. I've committed to the next 4 years at Notts. I've signed a long-term contract. And
you must be delighted with that. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely, because I'm not just at a club that wants to stay in League 2 and consolidate. And look, everyone asks me, I want to play at the highest level possible. Just because I've signed a long-term contract at Notts doesn't mean that I want to stay at this level or just play at the same level for the rest of my career. I want to play at the highest level possible. I've never played in the Football League, so this is the first step of that. You know, I'm proud to do that this season. But I'm not just at a club that just wants to stay in League 2. I'm at a club that wants to go through the levels, wants to go and get promoted to League 1, even a Championship long-term. Do you know what I mean? You've seen clubs do that and go through the levels, and I think Notts have the structure in place to do that. So that's the biggest reason why I signed a four-year contract. I'm not staying at a club that I think is going to stagnate and stay here. They're going to go through the levels, that I believe, and that's why I've signed a four-year contract, and that's why I'm looking forward to the next few years and hopefully going through the levels with Notts. Like I said, they put the faith in me quite early when no one else really did after leaving Gateshead. There wasn't loads of clubs that were willing to take the risk. Notts did, so I'm just repaying the faith and loyalty they've showed in me. I'm just repaying it now.
Macca, I mean, this has just been an absolute joy. We really do thank you for your time. And we've got David Stowell on this week, who's one of our very, very best commentators and a wonderful co-host. And he is naturally a very positive person, but he looks positively miserable compared to talking to you for the best part of 15 minutes, which is both a compliment to you both. Macca, thank you so very, very much, mate. We just wish you all continued luck moving forward. And just picking up on one last thing that you said with regards to what you take from a McGoldrick, a Bostock, a Gosling. Don't forget that that's two-way. You'll be pushing on these older players with that enthusiasm, with that drive, with that sheer joy for what this profession is, which is that it's a joy, isn't it? It's a gift to be able to play it professionally, to get paid for it, and to call it a job. So we just wish you all the very, very best from here on in, mate.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that.
And Stowley, as ever, my friend, I mean, feel free to say bye to Macca on your own terms.
Well, I'd echo everything you said. You've wrapped it up beautifully, but all the best for the rest of the season and keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, mate. Take care.
That's it. What a gloriously upbeat end to the podcast. Macaulay Langstaff, you will go very far, my friend. A big thank you to Macaulay, Emil Heskey, Kieran Campbell, and of course, David Stowell. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.